Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, they clear space and time and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Hello,
why
friends.
Is there a movie?
Jesus Christ, Sean.
There was silence and I had to fill it.
I'm like a terrible director with music.
I felt uncomfortable with the silence, so I started talking again. All right. Hello, friends, and welcome to the Experience Grind podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences we've gained along the way through movies, TV, games, music, and all that pop culture goodness. I am your host this week, Brian, and with me are my good buddies. He keeps himself locked up in his high-rise fortress and says really cool stuff and beats people at chess all day long. They call him the boss, but he's not Bruce Springsteen. It's Ryan.
Oh, shit. I am the boss. Of yeah. What? I don't know. Probably nothing good.
Does
I can't
it matter?
Wait to see who my rival is going to be.
Oh, yeah. He lives right across the street from his sworn enemy, never leaves the house, and will not answer the phone on Saturday. It's the rabbi, a.k.a. Kyle.
I mean, yeah, that checks out. I did want to convert to Judaism when I was younger. Never did
it. Is that real?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, wow.
I would like to call him the rabbi on Patreon.
Huh?
Why do they call him the rabbi?
Oh,
I see.
And he's the master of the Kansas City Shuffle. He's killed a lot of people, but he secretly has a heart of gold. He goes by many names, Good Cat, Smith, but we just know him as Sean.
Yeah, I'm a master of a lot of things, killing people. I wouldn't say I'm a master at being handsome, but I would say I'm a master at being Buick.
It is nice to be Buick. This week, we're going to be talking about Lucky Number 11, a movie from 2006 that kind of went under the radar, I think. Very small budget, $27 million. Did not do exceptionally well in the movie theater. I mean, like, it made its money back globally and then some, but I feel like this one kind of fell under the radar. Not a lot of people knew about this, but I
still
like
don't.
It and I wanted to share it with my friends. Had you guys seen this movie before?
I
already know the answer for Kyle and Ryan.
Yeah.
I based off of last week's reaction on how hype I was because I loved this movie, realized very quickly I've never seen this movie.
Oh,
and I was
that's
absolutely
favorite.
Confusing it with one of what was there, like Alpha Dog or like all sorts of different movies that came out along this time with like Justin
Paul
Timberlake
Walker,
and
Justin
like
Timberlake.
I saw Josh Hartnett and I was like,
Yeah.
This is gonna ruin the tour.
What tour?
The world.
So Kyle and I, we did this for the podcast. Had you seen this before the podcast, Kyle?
No, I'd never seen it before you. It was another one of those that, like, I don't know why, I used to have a thing against Josh Hartnett, I think because he was just one of those guys that's so talented and pretty, it just made me angry, so.
That's fair. He is pretty and he is talented.
Mm-hmm. I think he can play, like, piano or music, too, really well. Are we talking to you,
Brian? Pick a thing. Be beautiful. Be good at one other thing. Mm-hmm. You don't get to do all of them, Josh.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
That's how I feel about Donald Glover.
Right?
Come on, dude.
Yeah.
Save some for literally anybody.
You're
going
to inspire your own Spider-Man and also be good at all the things?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is Josh Hartnett still doing stuff?
Yeah, he just did a M. Night Shyamalan movie that was very well received, like last year.
Oh, I literally watched that. I'm
M. Night Shyamalan still doing
movie.
Things that are well received?
Fairly well received. Mostly it was Josh Hartnett, not the M. Night Shyamalan part.
Gotcha.
That was the one with the concert, right? And he's a serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got to find a way out. Is that what it's called, a way out?
Trap.
Okay.
Because they're trapping him.
Yeah.
I was going to get confused with that video game where you get out of a...
Get out of prison? That game ruled.
That game was a lot of fun.
That game.
Dave and I used to play that after we would finish recording. We'd sit down on his couch and play some A Way Out.
Yeah, that's by the same guys that did Takes Two. And I think Split Fiction. Mm-hmm. So
still
good.
Haven't done Split Fiction. I think it was their first one. Yeah. It's on my list.
Same.
But lucky number 11, not a video game, a movie. Mm-hmm. It's like 7, but with an L. before we get into it, I do have a little synopsis I wrote up here. So, give you a breakdown of what the movie's about. And spoiler alert for the 20-year-old movie. Yeah, I'm going to tell you the twists and all. We're gonna throw it all out there. We're going to do it. A smooth-talking hitman named Good Cat, played by Bruce fucking Willis, opens the movie by telling some guy about the Kansas City Shuffle, which is basically mob rule 101. Everyone looks one way while you're screwing them from the other side. He kills the guy in a bus terminal to prove his point. Enter Slevin Kalevra, Josh Hartnett, rocking that 2006 rom-com hair. He's crashing at his missing buddy Nick's apartment. But thanks to bad timing and even worse luck, he's mistaken for Nick and kidnapped by both mob bosses of New York. The boss, played by Morgan fucking Freeman, and the rabbi, played by Ben fucking Kingsley. Sir.
Mm.
Ben fucking yeah. Kingsley. Each of them demanding...
That's basically a double fucking.
That is a double fucking. For Sir fucking Ben fucking Kingsley. You're right.
Yeah.
Each of them are demanding repayment of Nick's debts. The boss wants Slevin to ice the rabbi's unfortunately nicknamed son, the fairy, while the rabbi also wants his money back. Basically, do our dirty work or you're dead. Slevin shrugs and agrees because when life hands you lemons, apparently you start plotting murder. Meanwhile, Detective Brakowski, Staniel? That's a new take on Stanley and Daniel. Staniel. Stanley fucking Tucci. Starts nosing around while Slevin cozies up to Nick's neighbor, Lucy Lou, who's playing a character named Lindsay, not Lindsay, played by Lucy Lou. For some reason, I worded it opposite there. Who's perky enough to make you forget that this is a noir-style revenge flick? They flirt, make out, do the thing, and somehow have actual chemistry in a movie full of hitmen and mobsters.
Mm.
Then mm-hmm. come all the plot twists. Slevin is actually Henry, a kid whose family the boss and the rabbi slaughtered 20 years earlier. Good Cat, originally hired to kill young Henry, spared him and raised him instead. Together, they've been conning both mob bosses and setting up the ultimate revenge play. Slevin kills the boss, the rabbi, and even crooked cop Brakowski, tying up the Kansas City Shuffle with a blood-soaked bow. But the surprise, the girl lives. He fakes Lindsay's death to keep her safe, which, of course, Good Cat approves, hands him his dad's watch, and ghosts into the crowd. And that's lucky number 11. There's also a horse race involved, and a lot of other people like Corey Stoll.
If I wasn't planning on it, but if I were to have a child and I were to have a boy, I would name that boy Staniel.
Staniel's a good name.
I do.
It's underrated for sure.
Yeah.
Not as good as Danley, but...
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah, well, Corey Stoll and Sam Jaeger.
I think it might be. I think Staniel's better than Danley.
Yeah, yeah. Staniel's the winner there. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Danley.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He should just change his name.
There's no need to get graphic this early in the show. Continue on.
If he's gonna change his name at all, it's gonna be to just the Tooch.
The Tooch. Ooh. Oh man. If you were to name a part of your body the Tooch, what would it be? Stay tuned, Patreon balls. Listeners. Oh, never mind.
No need to stay tuned, Kyle's gotcha. The Tooch. Well, that's obviously the inside of the elbow, right?
Oh, yeah. It's actually the other side of the gooch.
Yeah, the old twofer, the Tooch and the Gooch.
Yep. What's the other side of the Gooch?
The inside.
When you're going inside and you're basically bowling yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got a Tooch, yeah. The outside, the inside of the Gooch.
You're tickling the Tooch.
Yeah.
Tooch.
You've tickling. Never tried to see if you could feel your finger from the inside? Anyways.
Remember what you said about not wanting to go that dirty this early?
I did not do it. Yeah.
That's right. Yes. No, I'm just, some of us have restraint, Sean.
I do not, and I never claim that.
It's true. It's his strength.
All right. We're going to score this thing with our five usual categories, character, story, style, entertainment value, and direction. And we're going to just kick it off with story. Does anybody want to lead that off? Sean.
I really fucking like this story. I'm going to just bury the lead there. Though I feel like, man, I'm really perceptive when it comes to a lot of things, but I'm learning, like, some movies I'm not, and it blew me away tonight, like, when Sarah and I watched it, and she's like, oh yeah, I knew pretty much everything from this story beat to this story beat, and when this person said this thing, and I'm like, man, I am so glad that I am just really blinded a lot of times going into something, because by the end of the movie, I was like, what the fuck? Let's go. That was crazy. But also, Slevin there, holy fuck, does somebody hold a grudge? Like, got it. Like, oh no, they killed your fucking family. Ooh. Like, Jesus, like, let it go, man.
grow up.
Yeah,
we literally just defended John Wick, who had a dog killed.
Well, yeah, but he didn't wait 30 years. He didn't go wait 30 years.
He did it then.
Exactly.
Well, that's because John Wick is a fully formed Baba Yaga. Little baby Slevin has to grow.
We don't know that. Henry could have been a fucking psychopath. Did you hear him reciting that baseball shit? He could have been fucking crazy, dude.
We should reboot this movie, and it's a child that kills them all.
Yes. See? Don't wait 30 years. I wouldn't be saying this if he hadn't waited. Anyways,
that is, honestly, the John Wick formula has been applied to everything. Like Atomic Blonde, it's Charlize Theron doing it. And now it's Bob Odenkirk, old man, doing it. And it's all these different formulas. We haven't seen little kid killer yet.
Yeah.
Kid not, assassin. All right, kid who kills. Kid who is an assassin, not somebody killing kids. That's two different things.
Perhaps we can...
It's an assassin child killing other children.
Are they
Chucky?
That's actually
bad kids. Are they little Hitlers?
But it's all make believe. It's like a game with paintball guns.
Huh? What if their kid? Hear me out. Actually, don't, and I don't want to say that anymore. Let's continue.
No, I realized as soon as I said child assassin killing other children that we've gone down way too dark a path here.
Oh, no, that'd be great. I mean, I could I could flirt with this for a long time. He, like, gets in enrolled Patreon. Into, like, the kindergarten class and is, like, watching his victim and then, you know, makes him choke on a Lego and it looks like an accident.
Ooh, this is like American Horror Story season
this
one.
This is almost like Dexter style now.
Mm.
It's good stuff. He's pro.
Or a little bit like The Good Son, which we just talked about.
Anyways.
Mm-hmm. And then, sorry. I had one more.
Anyways, this movie, this story is right up my wheelhouse. I love things like, I love stories like this where it will just, it is telling this already really interesting story. And sure, you can tell that some things are up. And I actually was suspecting different people than what I should have. But I don't know. I enjoy the hell out of it, and I would give it a 5. I really enjoyed that story.
Hell yeah. Who do you want to hear from, Sean?
I want to hear from Ryan. I want to know what Ryan thought about the story. Because I never listened to y'all's episode on this before, and I have no idea.
It's probably not needing... I don't know, you don't need to. Would be my guess now. I like this movie a lot. I saw this in the theater. It was one I bought on DVD as soon as I could. I really enjoyed it. It has, or at least it did at the time, had like a very kind of unique style that spoke to me, or a style that wasn't overly saturated at that point in the game. I think now looking back, this feels very of the time, because then a lot of things did this kind of style. But story-wise, I think it's a really solid story. I think it's interesting that it comes the week after Now You See Me, because I think they both have very similar structures. They're both trying to pull the magic trick on you. I think Lucky Number 11 does it better. But I think it also has the same kind of issue that Now You See Me does at the very end, where we have to stop for like 20 minutes and do this exposition dump to catch up. And like, there has to be a better way to do that, or a more satisfying way to do it. And all I can think about is like going back to The Prestige. And I'm like, for me, that's like a 5. They are able to do that exposition dump in a way that it is like, it is the action. It is like, In a movie, especially specifically an action movie, like you wait for the explosions. In Prestige, you wait for like these wordy like back and forths between Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale. So when like there's like this huge exposition dump, it's kind of fine because like that's the meat and potatoes of the movie. And I feel like Lucky Number 7's kind of close to that, but not quite there. And I do think, luckily, much better than like the grind to a halt in Now You See Me, we are with two wonderful actors to really lift that scene. So I'm going to be straight kind of in the middle of the number, not high or low on it. I think it's a 4. I think it's great. I don't think it's perfect. I think there's some room for improvement. But I do think this is buoyed by the characters, which we'll get to later. I would like to hear from Brian.
All right, yeah. I don't think I hid that I really like this movie. I remember when this came out, I was working at the movie theater. I went and saw it, and I was like, oh, that's excellent. I love that. And I think I've watched it maybe twice since then. Just like once when it finally came out on, you know, on physical media. And then again this week. And revisiting it, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, there's a lot here that I remember. There's some things that I don't remember. And it's, knowing the twist doesn't completely ruin the rewatch. And that's one of the things I look forward to in movies like this, is how well did they leave the breadcrumbs, or as we talked about last week, the breadcrumb. and they did a good job here. And like, you notice things when you watch it the second time, like they don't show the face of the assassin that takes out the bookies, but you could pretty much figure out when you know, you see the hints, you're like, oh, that is Josh Hartnett. Damn it. Ah, they got me. It's really cool to see those little touches. There's one thing in this movie that has always bothered me, and it is going to be enough for me to give this a 4. And that is, I think it's all a little too convenient and cute that Lindsay is also the New York City coroner. I think that's it's a little too much of a coincidence. And that's the spot where it's like the suspension of disbelief is. And like, really? Of all the people? Just so you can get that one exposition of Stanley Tucci being a crooked cop in the past, you have given the love interest of the movie and like this really fun, quirky character a job that puts her within all the madness. And it's like unnecessary, but I understand why they did it. So yeah, for me, it's a 4. It's a solid 4. It's a high 4, honestly. But yeah, Kyle, what did you think?
I have a different problem with the meet cute. It's not the job. I think that's fine. What was my problem with EQ? Oh, it's that she's totally fine that she's just continuing to bang the guy that murdered her neighbor. And obviously a neighbor that she's very friendly with, because she would come into his apartment and spoke of him quite often. And she's just like, oh yeah, that's him. He's totally dead. I'm going to go bang hot Josh Hartnett. And I get it, girl.
I feel also like to that abandon- is very easily explained when he goes, hey, you know, he spent 8 years in prison for raping a cheerleader, right?
Was that part true, or was that? I couldn't tell.
That was part of his rap sheet.
Oh,
good pushback. I forgot about that.
That is good pushback. Also, she does kind of give up her entire life pretty quickly. She's like, oh, yep.
That is, yeah.
But I mean, also,
I've known you for 3 days, but I guess I will no longer be the elected official that is responsible for New York City's dead.
Yes.
I also want to start off by saying, Stage 5 clinger. I gave way too many points to Now You See Me last week. I want to retroactively take away 2 points for story. And then come
from
in
Now You See Me?
Yeah, from Now You See Me.
Okay.
And then you come in and give them. I think this, I agree with both Brian and Ryan. It's not perfect. It does a lot good, though, and enough to earn it a respectable 4. I really enjoyed this. I think this is one of the ones that does get better on the rewatch. The twist is it's so magnanimous that it blows your mind. So it's nothing that, like, you have to reach for. I think they don't do as good a job of setting it up as, like, some of the other greater whodunits that we've watched. I look back to what I think one of the best ones was Murder on the Nile or whatever, that Hercule Poirot we watched. Yeah, that one's great, and it does leave you a lot of actual followable breadcrumbs that you could kind of put some things together. You don't think so? Oh, you're just laughing.
No,
at
it's
that.
Just that this is going to be a thing now. Yeah. Like Jared,
I know. Sunday. I don't know if I like it yet either. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, 4 for story. It was perfect enough, but not perfect enough to get a 5.
That is not just, how that
it
word
could have
works.
Been just a little had, more perfect.
I had to qualify that after I said it. So
I don't think he knows what that word
is. All right, your next category is characters. I'll kick this one off. Holy shit! Holy shit! A murderer's row of actors in this movie. I mean, Hartnett is the lead here, but I mean, everybody around him is a huge heavy hitter. Willis, Tucci, Kingsley, Freeman. I mean, when you have people that are at the bottom of the call sheet and they're Corey Stoll and Robert Forster, like, what is happening here?
Robert Forster on just a call.
He shows up at the end of the movie to dump exposition, and then he's like, okay, I'm done.
I'm like, oh, shit, Robert Forster, let's go.
Lucy Liu is incredible in this movie, and she's so good. She's a little problematic as, like, she is the female character, and she is the love interest, and they're going to fridge her at the end of the movie, but not really. But I don't want to take any points away for this not passing the Bechdel test because she's the only woman in the movie. Because I love this movie. Well, I really like this movie, but I love this cast. This cast is incredible. Your protagonist, with Slevin and the twist and everybody's motivations and this, the tension you feel between Morgan Freeman and Ben Kingsley is so good. This is a 5 for me. And nice. I would like to know what Sean thinks.
I think you really nailed it there. I think the cast in this movie really made the story as well. Like, I don't know if having a different cast would have been as impactful because these are all just such, as you said, heavy hitters that all really do an incredible job with what they're given. I love that in this movie, I was never quite sure who I was actually rooting for or who I was like, okay, who's the bad guy here? And it was just like this constant guessing game, and everybody was cast so perfectly in that because even with the two big bads, you know, you got Ben Kingsley and Morgan Freeman, who I just want to like anyways. So it's like this really weird feeling of watching them. I thought this was cast perfectly. I also thought it was kind of funny with the timing. What is 2006, and you had a freaking Joshua Jackson freaking lookalike champion playing a degenerate gambler at the beginning of the movie who gets iced. Scott Gibson. This was absolutely stellar casting. I really enjoyed the characters. I thought Lucy Liu's, the character of Lindsay, was a lot of fun and added much needed levity to everything that was going on because it was really heavy at times. I'm also going 5 on this. And from there, I'd like to hear what Kyle thought about the casting and the characters.
As much as he blew up as the quintessential, well, one of action stars, even on the smaller scale, I love a subdued Bruce Willis. And that's what we get here in his performance of Mr. Good Cat and Smith. He's got that ability to be intimidating and do nothing. It's just in like the attitude and the presence, and it's so crazy to capture on like a medium just like film, but like I don't know, you do feel it in the way that he presents himself. I love that like the most action-packed thing he does is stand with two guns drawn while guys burst through a wall, and like like almost everything he does is like really, it's, I don't know, it's just clever editing and show, like I don't know, it's so smooth. I love how he's playing everybody too. It's been this long con for like 30 years. And that, I also appreciate that like he doesn't like do some grandiose self-sacrifice. Like they are the best at what they do, so obviously they fucking just totally take out everybody in both of these mob bosses and organizations. I agree with both of you, man. I don't think there's really anything negative here, and I think Hartnett and Lucy Liu have amazing chemistry. Like, that is some almost perfect casting. It's fully believable, and it's enjoyable to watch, and I can see why Josh Hartnett was in every rom-com, or the rom-com king for a while, too, because it works. So I'm also going a 5, and we'll see where Ryan takes us.
Well, I hate to be the one to burst bubbles.
Burst those bubbles. You can't. Somebody's got to do this
every week, Brian.
What, burst bubbles?
Yeah. You can't keep getting away with this.
Then why am I here? I really don't want to be that person. So I'm not going to be, because this is a 5 for me, too. And
I know it was.
I already spoiled it. Yeah. I still committed to the
Kansas City God shuffle on us.
Looking over there.
It's the Indiana slow walk. I fooled nobody, but I really tried. I really, really, really love the casting in this movie. I think Josh Hartnett is maybe one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood. Same with Lucy Liu. Both just do not get enough credit, and both really sing here. I think, god damn, we missed out on having like Josh Hartnett like be like a big actor. Like, it really sucks like he didn't blow up much more than this, because he's so fucking good. And same with Lucy Liu. I think Lucy Liu takes what is Kirsten Dunst and Elizabeth Town, like manic pixie dream girl type thing, and like really elevates it. It makes her like endearing and believable in a way like so many people who are given that role really struggle with. I think she sings in this movie. And as Sean said brilliantly, I think she adds so much levity, because this is a very dark movie, very much like, and it's not dark, like everything's real bad. It's black humor in like that Snatch Guy Ritchie kind of way. And very, I love the cast all around. Everybody, even like the smaller people, like Slow, I think it's a lot of fun.
You mentioned Corey Williamson. Stoll.
Yeah.
I'll just be slow.
Mm-hmm. They're real fun. They're a real fun pair. It feels almost like Shane Black too, in a way, how they're written. It's really good. I love the whole cast here. The biggest issue, I think, was also hinted at, which is I'm looking at this cast sheet in front of me, and it's a bunch of dick. It's a whole lot of dick, and then one Lucy Liu, which is unfortunate.
As was the custom at the time.
It's not exactly. It is not unheard of. Crank comes to mind real quickly. But like,
Crank is always right there in my mind.
For a lot of comparisons. But this is kind of like, it's of the era. So like, that's just how it was. And that's just what it is. But like, I'm glad Lucy Liu actually had a character and was not Fridge or something worse. So like, honestly, as much as I can complain about certain things, like, I've seen much worse from this era. And I've seen worse, like, even recently. So fuck it.
Yeah.
This is also a 5 for me.
Hell yeah.
I also want to play devil's advocate real quick here with like the subject matter and like the genre of this movie. I'm surprised that there's even one woman in this movie. You know, it's, you're dealing with assassins, hitmen, gangs, these crime organizations. Like, if there was more, what are you looking at? Them just being death fodder, like, through the movie? You know, it's... I don't know. I was surprised that there... That Lucy... That there was one prominent woman in this movie, and I was so glad that there was. Looking
and back. Again, she has her own agency. Yes. Crank is right there to point to, like,
yep.
What was Amy Smart doing in that? What role did she have? I don't remember. I think it was pretty lowly and nothing to speak of.
Mm.
She was just the girlfriend who was getting kind of like, I think, fucked around and used.
Just fucked.
to yeah. keep Chev alive. And that's it. So, like, that movie was the same year as Lucky Number 7, I think. We're very close to. So, yeah, Sean, I'm with you. Again.
It still doesn't excuse it.
Hard looking back now, but yeah. For the time, this was considerably enlightened, probably, for the time period.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about 2006.
Yeah.
And a movie about organized crime, which is a traditionally misogynistic industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Next up, we're going to be talking about style. And what rhymes with style? Well, that's Kyle. He's going to kick this one off for us.
All right. I guess I'm going to pull a Ryan here and talk my way through it because I'm waffling on two. I think this movie is incredibly stylistic. I think it does a lot of interesting things. I think it borrows heavily from noir, but it also does its own stuff within the noir genre. It's a fresher take. I like the way it presents so many things. I tell you what, just for the towel alone, fuck it. I'm also going 5 on style.
For the towel alone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Damn.
I think everybody's pretty really slick likes that in this. Towel. It has a pretty nice overall presentation. Wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm taking that back, actually. I take it back. We're going 4, and I mentioned this the very first time we reviewed this. It's got one of my small pet peeves. I get it with why it happens. Still bothers me. This movie suffers from pristine car syndrome, where every classic car is a mint cherry peach because those are the only ones that still exist anymore for people to rent out. Small, subtle thing, but it sticks out so damn obvious in that parking lot at the racetrack at the start of the movie. Where
of all places to have pristine cars.
Exactly. The dingy racetrack with all the scumbags. They've all got their perfectly polished rides. So yeah, I guess if I want to be petty, I'll say 4.
Which sounds like you're being petty.
I am.
That is such a that is a petty point.
It's
cool.
It's hip. I love it. I want to dress like Josh Hartnett in the sweater vest with the
good look,
the flannel pattern, and the shirt underneath. 5.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, he was living with the screenwriter Jason Smilovic in New York City while he was writing the script, and the whole towel thing was inspired by Josh Hartnett frequently walking around wearing just a towel.
Oh, what a thing to have to suffer from.
Yeah. Also, it gives the character a little bit of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. And that it does do.
It cracked me up that Elvis and Slo didn't even let him put on pants.
Also, that's fucking...
when they took him in.
That's Bubba. Well,
that's for the lip.
That is Bubba.
I love that. That's a different prosthetic from Forrest Gump. Instead of the bottom jaw sticking out, it's the top jaw.
So good.
That's so crazy.
It's a great little bit.
I knew he looked familiar.
So, Sean, if that's so crazy, tell me more about the style of that overbite and overall.
Dudes, I love the style of this movie. Even like the interior of every scene that you have, like the most gaudy wallpapers. Like artsy wallpapers everywhere. Like these rooms were pretty, but also hideous at the same time. Like it was just
prettiest.
Such wonderful, like set design.
They were really Buick.
It was super Buick, man. I thought, again, there was nothing musically that stood out to me. So that's, I'll always mark that as a neutral, cool point. Nothing was distracting. It was very slick. I will say, though, I don't know if it was my whatever I was streaming from or if it is part of the movie, but like I was getting kind of motion sick at the beginning of the movie watching this with a lot of the sweeping shots. I don't know if it was shot at a certain frames per second or something early on in some of them actions, but there is a point that I struggled a little bit with, but I'm very thankful that that went away quickly. If that is something that is part of the movie and the way that I shot it, I would absolutely give it a 4 for that because it was not pleasant. But if it was on my end, it's a 5.
I don't remember that personally, so I'm not sure. I don't know.
Did anybody else notice that, or am I just going crazy? Like, in the beginning of the movie, it just looked like some of the actions weren't completely smooth. And it was almost like skipped frames, but.
Yeah. No, there is absolutely a filter they're using that kind of like does this.
Especially for the flashbacks. Weird...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, that was making me sick watching that.
And it's not consistent, weirdly. Right. Like in one scene, it'll be going like 0.5 speed, then 0.75 speed, then like normal speed again in the same scene. Yeah. And it makes no sense why.
Oh, thank God. I'm not going
there's
crazy.
Some issues. No, I saw that too. I think the editing it does well, but there's some sloppiness to, especially the speeds at which they're doing the frame rates.
Now, do I dock it like I can't go half points here. So like, does that warrant being docked a full point when I thought that I will go a 4 because I feel like that will help balance out my story 5 to your guys's 4. So I'm going 4. And shoot it to Ryan. So Ryan went last time. Once he finishes,
as soon as you threw it,
emptying his lungs on the ground.
Jesus Christ. It hit as soon as like the pressure of an anxiety of like, oh, I got to speak now. All right. I'm sorry, listeners, for that noise. Style wise, I think I'm not going to repeat a lot of what Sean and Kyle just said. I agree with both of them so far, but I will also add in. That I think there's also an issue with the music for me. I think the music is super generic, and now I've seen this movie 4 or 5 times at least, and I still can't remember a theme or anything. This is just tones that blend into nothing. And I do think, like, love it or hate it, Guy Ritchie can do a well-placed needle drop. And I think 1 or 2 like well place needle drops in this movie would have just helped like kick it up a notch. So like this, in addition to like some of like the amateurish editing mistakes and whatever, not even mistakes, we'll just say choices, and the choices just might not speak to me. So with that, I'm right with Sean. I think this is another solid 4. It's really solid, really strong. It's not perfect, and there are things they could do to make it a better movie. But it's still really good and admirable what they do here with the style. It's so fucking slick, and everybody looks real cool. It's shot cool. Mm-hmm. Great production design, too. Sorry. With that, I'll kick it to Papa Cheese.
Papa Cheese.
Papa Cheese.
I will absolutely adopt that nickname. I like it. Papa Cheese. I'm in agreement with what everybody said here. This movie's slick. It looks really cool. There were some definite choices, especially in the flashbacks, that were questionable. There was an interesting thing they did where when they flashed back to something Josh Hartnett was telling somebody, and it was a lie, it was in black and white, and I really enjoyed that. And I didn't pick up on it until this time.
Oh, wow.
Just really interesting things like that. The design of the bus terminal, I still don't know if I like it or hate it.
It's weird. It looks like it's from Men in Black.
Exactly. The first time I saw it, I was like, what is this? Is this supposed to be an airport? What is? And then when I read that it was a bus terminal, I was like, okay, well, I don't spend a lot of time bus terminal, so maybe it's accurate. I really don't know. It looks like it's trying to be in the future. but it's a very strange choice. But I understand, like, it looks cool. I just don't know if it's appropriate. It all that say, it's a 4 for me too. It's for the most part, this is hitting on most cylinders, but it's just that one that it's not quite. It's not all the way there, and I think that I don't know if that's on the part of the editors or the director or what happened there, but there's it's like so close. And I agree with Ryan on the music. There's nothing memorable about this soundtrack other than the going to credits with the actual Kansas City Shuffle song. There's nothing memorable.
That's true.
So yeah,
that's true.
4. The next category is entertainment value. And I think I want to hear from Ryan first on this one.
Well, this is an interesting one because it also includes the box office, the budget, kind of all this stuff. And this is a surprisingly pricey movie for what it is, because there's really not a lot of action. I have to imagine that all went to the stars, to which money well spent, because that's kind of like the buoy here. They really do add a lot, worth every penny. I am going to pull up the sheet. Yep, did not make it. Well, it probably broke about even. Maybe it made its money back with DVD and rental sales. Who knows? I like to think this one's going to be one of those cult movies that really finds a second life later on. It was just hard because, again, post Pulp Fiction, post Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, they were just so, Boondock Saints, like. There were so many of these type of movies that, like, so many got lost, even the good ones like these. So I think this is an underrated gem. Entertainment value, it's strong. I really only felt the length, and it's a solid hour 50 in the final 20 minutes, again, because it just kind of crawls to a halt to explain. And on the first watch, that's not going to be an issue. First watch, you're gonna love this shit, because it's good to know. But now 5 or 6 times into it, it really, I kind of feel it. But I don't know. I can't really take that away. I really love the dialogue. It all sings so well. Everybody plays off each other. Even like small appearances from people are nice. Just see like Robert Forster pop up or Danny Aiello. That's entertaining to me. I don't know. This is very entertaining. It's one of the more entertaining movies we did recently. I'm gonna go with a very reserved 5, but a 5 nonetheless.
Nice.
I am curious. I think who is gonna be the most opposite of me here? Who is gonna go either really high 5 or maybe even lower? I'm going to go with Kyle, because Kyle is doing his damnedest to not look at the camera.
I'm just being me, baby. that said, I am slightly different score from you. Because I think the one drawback of this movie that brings it into a perfect rewatchability level of entertainment is it does get a little long in the tooth at that 1 hour 50 length. Even 10 minutes off could have benefited, I think. And we probably could have got some in there, but overall, I think it's entertaining as hell. It's a fun watch. So much of that is the character and the dialogue, which is an entertaining thing. You don't need the action scenes, and like, there's very little of them. But what is presented is slick. It's cool. It's fun. It's a 4. Shawnee?
Nice. It is strange to me looking at this the week that this came out. I saw the Benchwarmers in theaters, I saw V for Vendetta in theaters, I saw Inside Man in theaters, and I never saw this movie in theaters. And that is, what the fuck? 2006 was a fun year for movies. And I'm bummed that I didn't, because I had a hell of a time with this. I agree that I was a little reserved when I saw the hour and 50 minute long runtime. It was a little like, but then it gets going and I'm like, man, I could just watch this kind of thing and this pace and this kind of paced out reveals. I could watch that for 5 hours and not get bored. I agree, though, when you even when it hits the exposition at the end, like there is a point where you're like, okay, you don't have to explain every step by step. But then the flip side, that leading to you have Bukowski on the phone in the car at the end, where he's getting like those little the breakdown of who Slevin is. That was like one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. And you just see like Slevin pop up behind him. Oh, man. I can't go less than a 5 on here. I'm not going to. I really think that like 10 minutes could easily have been shaved off of this movie. Maybe not easily, but they could have found a way. But I think that's more so on director than entertainment. And so I'm going to give this a 5. And Brian, let's hear from you, dude.
I don't think it's going to be any secret. This movie, Poo. I find insanely entertaining. I could watch this again right now, in fact. This thing is a lot of fun. I mean, the performances that are being put on here and the twists and the dialogue is all so enjoyable, and it's such a pace that it really holds you, and you want to know what happens. And even on the rewatches, there's stuff to pick up on, the breadcrumb. And it's man, there's not much more I can say other than this is a 5 for me too.
Nice.
I feel like if this movie had received the ad budget that Smoke and Aces got, it would have been huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it deserved it because Smoke and Aces was a garbage movie.
Yeah.
Disagree.
Well,
disagree, but I do like this one better.
That might have been the movie that I was thinking about.
Smoke and Aces was what I wanted. I wanted Smoke and Aces to be this when I saw it. And I was like very disappointed.
Yeah. I wasn't. Alpha Dog came to my head. I saw a dude get shot by a 50 caliber and it was glorious.
Mm-hmm.
That Qantas Density 0.50. And so I say replica.
All right, our last category is direction. This movie was directed by Paul McGuigan, which is just a fun name to say, Paul McGuigan. He also did Push. He did a couple episodes of Luke Cage. Did 4 episodes of Sherlock, which surprised me because I guess it makes sense. Tonally, it's similar to Sherlock, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this guy, Paul McGuigan, who wants to kick this off? Kyle?
Oh. Ryan? Okay.
Ryan?
It's weird to be so high on everything and then to come in on this one. I don't know. Like, it's very fitting to me. I don't know. This was like this guy's biggest movie. And he moved into TV, which seems, I feel like I'm shitting on the guy, but it seems that's more of his wheelhouse. And to be honest, Slevin at points kind of feels like an extended TV series. So it has sort of the vibe and it makes sense, but not to say it's overall not bad, but like out of everything else, the one thing we've kind of hit on is that there's a lot of things that just don't stand out. They don't get that extra bump, whether it be the music or the pacing or the timing. There's just some things everywhere. And overall, I think I'm going straight down the middle on this guy. I'm giving him a 3 on directing. So that's where I'm going to go. And then Ryan also had his hand up. So I want to see him if he's going to counteract.
I'm not. I'm right there with you. I'm also out of 3. I'm glad you mentioned the director, Paul McGuigan. He is, that's probably not how you pronounce his name.
I'm there's not a sorry. W in there.
Is there? There's a silent H. No,
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
You just can't see it.
You can't see it.
I hate Push. I think Push is an awful action movie with an awful style. I also really do not like Victor Frankenstein. I think in those instances, though, they also have like shit scripts and like not the best casting. I think what works about Lucky Number 7, and this is what I am looking at and judging from looking at his filmography now, it's not him. He is not the secret sauce here. I think the secret sauce is in the cast. I think the writer and the snappy dialogue, the story twist, the direction's fine. It's fine. In fact, I think some of the worst choices are probably his, and it's the choices to do like the weird slow-mo framing in the flashback scenes and like this weird grainy filter and things like this. I don't know. I think 3 is perfectly fine for him, and he's perfectly fine. Yeah. Brian, what do you think?
I am inclined to agree with both of you. I think this, he is probably the weakest part of this formula. It seems like he was getting a lot of inspiration from other things, like your Shane Black movies, your Guy Ritchie movies. Even the flashbacks and the reveals had almost like an Ocean's 11 feel to them. Like, he was pulling from a lot of different sources, and he was lucky enough to have people around him that could make it a coherent movie and a good one. But I think that is in spite of Paul McGuigan, not because of him. I think this probably could have been huge with a bigger director behind it, with even with the budget they had going mostly to the actors, I assume. It's there was definitely more that could have been done here. It had a style that was cool, but it didn't quite get over the finish line. The music was there, but it was weak. There's a lot of editing choices, and just I'm echoing everything Ryan said at this point. But it's he's Paul McGuigan is not the reason this movie is the movie I love. In fact, there are some things he did that probably detracted from the movie I love. So I'm right there with you guys. I'm giving this a 3. And Sean, bring it home.
Man, everything that you guys said, but in addition, there's something that Kyle said that made me think about or remember something that stood out so many times. And there was this weird thing that they did in putting this movie together where there were so many cuts in this movie where it cut to black, everything silenced out, and it went just a beat or two too long to, I had the thought of, am I getting an ad break right now? Mm-hmm. Before I realized I wasn't watching it on Pluto TV or whatever. I was watching it on Amazon, on Prime. And it took me out every single time. Every time. So Kyle, when you said like it could have been a mini series or something like that, I had several times during the movie thought, wow, did they put these in to be just like the perfect, if this is on TV, this is where you cut for commercials? Because that's really annoying and super amateur feeling. And I couldn't stop thinking about that every time it happened. So 3 as well. So.
Also, that shot where they go from one window to the other and then they reuse the exact same shot in reverse later in the movie. I was like, that's so lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's clearly a CGI shot when they could have just brought in a crane and done it like practically.
Yeah, it's so right. For $27 million, like, come on.
And it would have been a scene that people still talk about. Like, remember that crane shot from Lucky Number 11? But
yeah,
here we are.
But instead, I'm sitting here being like, that cost $27 million. Did you see Happy Gilmore too? Do you see how many people he got in there for $20 million?
Right. Or to echo
thanks,
the director.
Kyle, what's your name?
Newacek.
Yeah.
Newacek.
He's the man. He'll make a movie look good for less.
Fucking
that's probably not
it.
What he wants to hear. That's not what right. He's going for, but he does it well.
He's like, no, give me a high budget movie, please. That would be fun.
Newacek, the Costco of movie directors. Let's go.
Oh, no.
You heard it here first, folks.
Signature Happy Gilmore. What?
Oh, man.
All right. Well, this movie, it was kind of all over the place in the reviews. Starting with Rotten Tomatoes, critically, it only had a 52%, which I was surprised by. But the audience gave it an 87, and that's a huge gap. And I am always intrigued by a huge gap in the critical score and the audience score. And that carries over to IMDb, had a 7.7 out of 10. Metacritic, 53, because it goes mostly on the critics. And then 3.6 on Letterboxd. So right within that range. But we are on the high end with the audience on Rotten Tomatoes. We gave this thing an 85 total.
Wow. Wow. Was there anything, did you see anything from a big chunk of the critics that that pointed towards why it was so low critically?
You know, I actually didn't even read any of the critics' reviews.
Well, fuck them. Because I saw the score
and I was like, I don't want to know what they have to say. Also, from years of conditioning that Dave is the guy who reads the critic scores, so... I tend to just skip them because I'm like, somebody will look at it.
Because that was really surprising to see that was so low.
Yeah.
I would have, okay, maybe 75. You know, but 52 is crazy.
I think a lot of critics thought it was trying too hard.
Now You See Me, I think, had a higher rating.
Yeah, I don't understand movie making your audiences, because I would find things that would not get seen by people, because Now You See Me was like one of the highest grossing movies that year.
Never mind.
A soul was sold to Satan, surely, somewhere in the process. I don't know.
Mark Ruffalo sold his soul. Ruffalo, my bad.
Huh. Yeah. Well, this did score one higher than Now You See Me. I went back and looked at the sheet. So that makes me feel better. Gross.
Didn't we give it a 51? We gave Now You See Me a 51.
56.
Kyle took off 2 points, number. So it's actually lower.
Yeah, that's right. Kyle did retroactively remove 2 points.
I sure
no, critically, Now You See Me was a 51. I thought that it was higher than Lucky Number 11, and I was aghast. Yeah. Yeah. Brian, I am so glad that you brought this to the table. It, like, having thought that I had seen this before and getting into it really quickly and realizing that I hadn't was such a treat.
Hell yeah. I can imagine. Like, I do that a lot too. Like, I'm like, I've seen that movie, and then a few minutes in, I'm like, oh, I haven't seen this. And because I thought I had seen it, I was like, I don't need to watch it. But yeah, I'm always grateful when that happens, and I realize I hadn't seen the movie, and I'm like, now I can actually cross it off the list.
Especially when it's a banger, dude. Like,
yeah.
It sucks when you think that you've seen it, and then you watch it, and you're like, wow, that movie sucked.
I wish I could go back to when I thought I liked it after I had seen it.
Oh, man. Now I just want to watch more stuff with Hartnett in it. Like,
Do you? Because I'm ready to go with the pick next week if that's the case. I thought it might be too soon for another Hartnett.
No, we've been having...
Weird Hartnett.
We've been having a really weird thing where we're almost like taking one actor from the previous movie and just using that to... influence our next choices. So I'm completely here for that.
Just continue the chase. We got
50 degrees.
I can almost guarantee that trend doesn't continue after Ryan's.
All right.
Almost.
Why, Ryan, where are you thinking of taking us?
Well, let's get a vote here. As always, I'm going to leave it to you three. Ooh,
he's got options.
There's Hartnett choice. Non-Hartnett choice. If you want more, I can give you more, but I feel like that might be enough of a sway.
Well, I want the only Hartnett I've seen that I
guarantee
don't like.
You've not seen the Hartnett. None of you have seen this Hartnett.
It's 40 days, 40 nights. Well, I'll kick that back. I also do not like Pearl Harbor.
Oh, that's a bad one.
That's fair.
That's a garbage movie, too. That said, you did also say weird. You say I haven't seen it, so I'm curious. I would vote Hartnett. I enjoy this Josh resurgence, so I'm pro-Hart.
Yeah, I think I could go a little more Hartnett instead of Hartnot, but I don't know. I think I want to know, like, one thing about the Hartnot.
Yes, one thing. I am dying to know
one thing about the Hartnot.
Like, even if I'm, 100% on the Hartnett, I need to know one thing about the Hartnot.
Directed,
I want to know what I'm missing out on.
By a very funny British person about a very non-British thing. A very American thing, specifically.
Oh, a very funny British person directing something very American.
Or about a very American topic.
Uh-huh. A very American topic. Damn, that's promising.
All right, we'll get into guessing games on the Patreon. But I'm voting Hartnett.
Yeah, I think it's unanimous. We're going Hartnett.
All right. Fantastic. All right. Well, I'll reveal it then. Next week we'll be talking about a movie. Again, I'm pretty sure none of you listeners have seen or heard of. It's called Oh Lucy. It's from 2017 and it's from director Atsuko Hiranagi. And it's about a lovely little chain-smoking office worker who dreams of a life with Josh Hartnett, the actor, and then decides to pursue it.
What?
I love that.
It's based on the reason he got out of
it. Holy shit.
This was kind of his, I think, reintroduction back into Hollywood after his, long hiatus. And it was a really charming little movie that I would like to revisit, see if it still holds up.
Is this even... This isn't even Hollywood.
Wasn't he in Wild Horses, 2 years before this?
Which one?
Wild Horses.
What's Wild Horses?
With Robert Duvall, James Franco.
Dang. Oh. Okay. That...
Maybe. I've never heard of this one. Directed by Duvall. Oh, never mind. Well, this was his...
I'm super intrigued.
Yeah, never mind. And Wild Horses was maybe his in Back to Hollywood. I'm seeing now.
Maybe Josh Hartnett never even left.
Daydreaming. Yeah.
That's
true. Well, I look forward to this. What a cool concept. Listeners, if you've enjoyed what you've heard here and you're just excited as I am to watch Oh Lucy for next week, head on over to our link tree. What's that?
Nothing. That'll Patreon. Sorry.
Head on over to our Linktree at linktree.com/experiencegrind where you can find our Discord link. You can also find our Patreon where you can go and support us. And for as little as a dollar, you can get a bonus episode every week. So think about it. That's an extra couple of hours a month of us where I have no idea what's going on with these guys, but I'm sure they're going to tell me over there. So join us there, be cool, hang out, and shoot it back to Brian.
Hey, thanks for listening, thanks for joining us. I hope you like Lucky Number 11, and go schmoo yourself.